Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents 45 Caliber 6, Firebrand, by Peter Brandvold. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Alejandro Ruiz, Andy Brownstein, Michael Glenn, Yasmin Toison, Tia Shearer, Peter Holdway, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Nora Ashrati, Eric Messner, Colleen Delaney, David Jordan, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Chris Gennebach, Nathaniel Perry, James Lewis, Bradley Smith, Christopher Walker, Eva Wilhelm, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, and Michael John Casey. 45 Caliber 6, Firebrand. Kuno Massey saw the Indian a quarter second before the arrow careened toward him from a snag of brush and sun-bleached rocks. The arrow traversed the 30 yards so quickly that Kuno had no time to do anything as the feathered projectile seared a shallow trough along his left cheek. He'd been holding his cocked Winchester across his saddle bows. Now he raised the gun and took aim at the Indian. Another arrow whooshed past Kuno's ear to slice into the orange sand and gravel near the paint's right rear hoof. Renegade bucked. Kuno reached for the saddle horn, missed it, and holding his Winchester in his right hand, flew back over the paint's lurching hip. As he hit the ground, an arrow clipped his right calf in a searing burn. He rolled off his shoulder and swung his rifle toward the first Indian. Amidst the chipping rocks and powder smoke, the Indian's painted face disappeared. Levering another round, Kuno wheeled. The Indian behind him was running straight at him, notching another arrow. Kuno took aim with his Winchester. As the body hit the ground, Kuno wheeled to his right. Beyond the near rocks and cedars, clay-colored dust rose in the waning afternoon sunlight. Kuno levered a fresh shell into the Winchester's breech and bounded toward the oncoming rider. He ran 30 yards and stopped. A long-haired horseback rider in calico and deer hide appeared above the cedars and willows. The brave, clad in a wolf-head cape, a medicine pouch dangling down his chest, aimed an old Springfield rifle straight out from his left shoulder. Seeing that he missed his target, the Indian reined his big Appaloosa toward Kuno, intending to run him down. Heart thudding, Kuno held his ground. He snapped his Winchester to his shoulder and drew a bead on the Indian's chest, just above the big stallion's bobbing, wide-eyed head and buffeting mane. The horse was 10 feet in front of Kuno when he drilled a quarter-sized hole through the brave's breastbone. The ute flipped straight back off the horse's rump, disappearing into the dust and cedars behind the horse's flying hooves. At the same time, Kuno leapt off his boot heels, pivoting and diving left. Reins trailing from the braided halter, the stallion disappeared behind a cabin-sized lump of black lava rock. Kuno looked in the direction the last brave had fallen. He saw only an indistinct hump in the brush, unmoving. He rolled onto a hip and climbed to a knee, the movement of his foot oddly restricted, though in all the excitement he hadn't noticed it before. A blue ashwood arrow trailed from his right deerskin legging, the strap iron head touched with blood. Kuno reached down, worked the arrow out of the cuff, it had gone through two layers of deerskin, then snapped it in half and tossed it into the brush. Now he could feel the strangely chill blood dribbling down his calf, but the ache was only slightly worse than that of a deerfly bite. Holding his right arm stiffly against his side, he heaved himself to his feet and swung the arm up beside him, balling his cheeks as the ache in his shoulder bit him. The shoulder didn't seem broken or separated, a bad bruise. He'd live. He picked up his rifle, dusted it off, and thumbing cartridges from his shell belt into the Winchester's loading gate, tramped slowly back to the scene of the ambush. He'd ridden up here, away from the freight wagons that he and his partner, Serenity Parker, were trailing up from Crowfeather to the base of the Rawhide Range, to scout the movement in the hills that old Serenity had glassed from his wagon seat. They'd spied Indian sign, unshod hoof tracks and the body of a woodcutter pinned to his wagon with arrows and a feathered war lance along the trail from Rawlins 2 days back. The Utes weren't supposed to be making war in this neck of the woods. Why they'd been shadowing the wagons and ambushed him up here, he had no idea. But something cold had dropped deep inside him, And he had a bad feeling the last 20 miles to the Trent Ranch headquarters at the southwestern base of the Rawhide Range wasn't going to be half as smooth as the first 150. At the edge of the slight clearing in the rocks, he stopped. The Indian he'd clubbed had disappeared. He saw the two round indentations in the sand where the brave had dropped to his knees. Scuff marks and blood drops led off between two large boulders at the edge of the clearing. Slowly, licking his chapped lips and holding the cocked Winchester straight out from his right hip, Kuno followed the trail. He pushed through the thick cedars, meandered around the buck brush and sage, raking his gaze from left to right before him. That's when Kuno heard what he feared would happen.
The wagons!
Waiting for his horse to arrive, he quickly moved up to the top of the scarp and cast his dread-filled gaze southward. His heart leapt once more. His three wagons, manned by Serenity Parker and two other men he'd hired in Crowfeather, were inching along the off-white trail, heading to Kuno's left. They were little larger than brown ants from this distance of a half mile, and the trail they were following was a faint line through the scrub and cedars and occasional sandstone boulders littering a broad, bowl-shaped valley. The Indians, five dusky figures on paint horses, were galloping along the trail behind them, within 50 yards and closing. One was extending a rifle in one arm, while the others raised bows, quivers jostling down their fur-clad backs. Calling for his horse again, Kuno replaced the spent cartridges in his Winchester's breech. He raked his eyes away from the Indians attacking his freight-heavy wagons to see Renegade bound out from behind a larger hump of gray and red banded rock. The horse's silky dun mane billowed in the wind, his reins bouncing along the ground to both sides.
Come on, boy!
As the horse approached the base of the scarp, Kuno clambered along the curved side, stepped off a protruding thumb, and dropped into his saddle. Sliding his Winchester into its boot, jutting over the right stirrup, he leaned forward, grabbed the reins, and wheeled the horse sharply. In a second, horse and rider were plunging down the rocky, cedar-stippled slope, angling east toward the wagons, the big horse's iron-shod hooves raising a veritable thunder, heavy dust rising behind the mount's arched tail. At the base of the slope, Kuno slipped his Winchester from the boot and cocked it one-handed.
Here we go!
Kuno crouched low over his saddle horn as Renegade raced through the high desert scrub. As he topped a low rise, he saw the Indians moving in a right-to-left line before him, loosing arrows at the dust-obscured wagons, while the Brave with the carbine triggered sporadic rounds over his piebald's head. 100 yards from the trail, Kuno dropped over a low rise and checked the skewbald down, peering ahead through the rocks and shrubs for a new fix on his position. The Indians were slower than before because of the freighter's crackling rifle fire, but still overtaking the wagons. Ahead of the galloping warriors, the Conestogas were raising a raucous clatter. Serenity and the other two drivers were triggering lead behind them. Kuno reined Renegade sharply left and pressed his knees against his saddle, all the signal the well-trained skewbald paint needed to lurch forward into another ground-chewing gallop. Kuno intended to cut the Indians off from the wagons, buy some time for Serenity, Dallas Snowberger, and Dutch Rasmussen to ford up and return fire. In their lumbering wagons, jerking along too crazily for accurate shooting, they were easy pickings. Horse and rider dropped into a depression behind a high, shelving dike. When they came out the other side, an arrow cut the air a foot in front of Kuno's head. Kuno looked in the direction from which the arrow had careened and saw one of the Braves angling toward him at breakneck speed. Kuno swung his rifle at the oncoming buck and pulled the trigger. As he jacked another round one-handed and kept Renegade chewing up the terrain before him, angling toward the trail and the wagons, the Indian knocked another arrow. The tall, war-painted Brave aimed and let go. The arrow cleaved the air where his head had been. Probably would have drilled him through the ear. These warriors were more accustomed to shooting from a moving mount than Kuno was. Kuno took his reins in his teeth and raised the Winchester to his right shoulder. He planted the rifle's bobbing sights in the middle of the Brave's jostling form. The Brave flew back off his brown and white paint's lurching right hip. Lowering the Winchester, Kuno hauled back sharply on his reins. The Indian's paint raced past, a foot in front of Renegade's nose, and continued on up the slope toward the rocky northern ridge.
Yeah!
Kuno dropped into another depression. When he came out of it again, he glanced toward the trail. Two of the three Conestoga freighters, with Philadelphia sheeting drawn across their high-sided beds, had pulled off into the brush on the far side of the trail. Behind them, four Indians were milling, no longer closing the gap between them and the wagons, but continuing to loose arrows at the already pincushioned oak sideboards. Kuno slowed Renegade and glanced back along the dusty trace. The third wagon, driven by Dutch Rasmussen, had disappeared amidst the gently rolling, boulder-pocked scrub.
Shit!
Kuno headed Renegade straight for the two wagons, raising his Winchester to dispatch one of the harassing braves and silently cursing his fate. He and his men had come within 20 miles of the Trent headquarters to get horn-swoggled and tail-knotted by a half-dozen moon-calf Ute Yunkers, likely out on a whiskey-inspired tear. Kuno had $1,000 tied up in those wagons, mules, and in the freight. A winter's worth of food and dry goods intended for Logan Trent's Double Horseshoe Ranch at the base of the Rawhide Range. He and Serenity had had too good a year of freight hauling for Fort Dixon and local ranches to lose it all here at the start of winter. They needed the Trent payout to get them through the snow months without having to swamp Denver saloons, which he and Serenity had been forced to do last winter while building up a stake for wagons and freight. Kuno took aim with the Winchester. An Indian who just loosed an arrow at Serenity's wagon jerked and sagged sideways in his saddle. Two more Indians were milling in the tall shrubs 30 yards west of the Conestogas. Serenity was hunkered beneath the end of his Conestoga while Snowburger was shooting from amongst the jumbled black rocks on the other side of the wagons. Kuno leapt down from Renegade's back. Racking a live round into his Winchester, he ran crouching behind a low shelf of sand, rock, and spindly cedars toward the wagons. As the dusty Philadelphia sheeting of the first wagon rose on his right, he dashed up from behind the shelf and ran toward the wagon, beneath which Serenity was still triggering his Winchester. He dove beneath the high bed in a spray of dust and gravel, pushed up on his elbows and raised his Winchester toward one of the painted figures still jostling around behind their screen of shag bark and cedars.
Kuno, jumping Jehoshaphat! I seen a long blonde scalp hanging from one of them red devil's loincloths and thought it was yours.
Not yet. You see what happened to Dutch?
Took an arrow.
Lying belly flat, Serenity was sighting down the Winchester.
Gotcha, you son of a bitch!
Dallas, hold your fire!
Kuno scrambled out from under Serenity's wagon, left a rock, and holding his cocked rifle up high across his chest, bowled through the scrub cedars. On the other side, he aimed the Winchester straight out from his shoulder and looked around. To his left, one of the braves was down on a boulder. Blood dribbled from a hole in his forehead. His horse was galloping off to the south, trailing its hemp reins. To his right, a brave was on his back, blood oozing out of his belly. Snowburger walked up and stopped on Kuno's right. Serenity came up through the cedars behind him, thumbing fresh shells from the bandoliers crossed on his scrawny chest, clad in 20-year-old fringed buckskin.
They got any mules?
One took an arrow in his rump, but not deep. He'll last to the Trent headquarters if we do.
How about yours, Dallas?
Nah.
Snowburger moved up left of Kuno, 10 yards away, brushing at an arrow graze under his left eye. He peered around warily from beneath the brim of his soiled tan hat. Kuno had hired the man out of a Crowfeather saloon when Serenity had convinced him they needed a spare driver and an extra gun in this apron land west of the Great Divide, where renegades from the mining camps were known to harass freight trains. Snowburger had proven a capable driver and handy with a sidearm. 2 days ago, he'd shot a sand rattler about to strike one of the mules, a single clean shot through the neck with a nondescript Schofield 44. Now it looked like he could hold his own with an old beat-up Henry 16 shooter as well. They'd suspected they might attract trouble with white men, but not from the area's Indian tribes, the Utes, Crows, and Southern Utes, most of whom were said to have been peacefully minding their own business for the past year or so in the wake of Custer's demise at the Little Bighorn in Montana. Snowburger wiped blood on his pants.
They came up on us from both sides of the trail, not long after you pulled off to scout the ridge.
Told you, I smelled the red devils.
Kuno, convinced they were alone here, lowered his rifle and headed west toward where the third wagon had disappeared.
Poor old Dutch. Got a bad feeling about the old boy.
Kuno glanced over his shoulder at the dark-eyed Snowburger.
Dallas, stay with the wagons. We're gonna see about Dutch.
Snowburger was a grim, silent man, but he didn't balk at taking orders from one nearly 10 years his junior. He brushed at his cheek again and stopped, cradling the Henry in his arms and staring west with that dark, pensive gaze beneath ridged black brows. He obviously didn't feel any more optimistic than Serenity about Dutch Rasmussen's fate. Kuno and Serenity had walked 50 yards beyond Snowburger when, beginning to climb a low, rocky hogback liberally pocked with dried cow plop, both men stopped suddenly. Black smoke ribboned up from the other side of the hogback, swirling gently. Kuno lurched forward, breaking into a run and leaving Serenity behind as he sprinted up over the top of the hogback and down the other side. He could see the wagon now, angled off the trail and piled up on its side in rocks and brush. All of the mules were down and unmoving. Behind them, flames leapt from the wagon's rear, growing and spreading quickly, black smoke broiling. Kuno dug his heels in. Holding the Winchester in one hand, he pumped with his free arm and his knees, chin up, teeth gritted. His hat blew off and drifted back behind him. He had to get to the wagon, put the fire out before it consumed his entire load and the precious Conestoga itself. Beyond the smoking, flaming wagon, a cream horse and dusky-skinned rider galloped west, away from the Conestoga, long hair bouncing down the brave's broad back. As Kuno approached the wagon, which lay a good 50 yards south of the trail, he slowed to a stop, arms dropping to his sides. Futility bit him deep. The entire top of the sheeted load was involved now, and the flames were curling up over the driver's box. Kuno looked around for Dutch Rasmussen. The big Swede was nowhere in sight. Serenity ran up behind him, the graybeard's face creased with misery. Kuno swept the sage and juniper-pocked terrain with his eyes, then spotted Rasmussen lying up near the trail. A big, blonde Scandinavian with a red face and bulbous nose, bright from too much hooch, the old mule skinner lay on his back across a pinyon pine sapling, one tall black boot crusted with old mule manure propped on a mossy rock. Two arrows protruded from Rasmussen's hard, swollen belly, clad in a bright red calico shirt and a smoked elkskin vest, another from the side of his hatless head. One, shot in his lower back, had been broken off in his tumble from the wagon. Blood pulled out from the wound to stain the wiry brown grass beneath him. Kuno dropped to a knee beside the big man. A good freighter, no less reliable for Kuno's having to drag him out of a crow feather brothel the morning they were to hit the trail for the Trent Double Horseshoe. Kuno tugged at a dry grass clump as he stared down at Rasmussen's inert face and scrubbed at his own forehead angrily with a sleeve of his fringed buckskin tunic. He looked toward the burning wagon. Serenity was moving toward him, silhouetted against the leaping flames and broiling smoke behind him.
Is that Dutch?
Kuno stood, nodding grimly.
I'll get a show.
Just then the ground leaped beneath Kuno's boots.
Cover!
Kuno grabbed the old man's tunic and half-carried, half-dragged the stove-up oldster behind a boulder flanked with pines. When Kuno looked up, Serenity Parker was scowling down at him from his craggy, bearded face.
Damn it, you young firebrand! Why didn't you tell me we was hauling enough ammo to take on the whole Sioux Nation?
Took the words right out of my mouth, you old bastard.
Kuno Massey and Serenity Parker walked out from behind the boulder to mosey toward the burning Conestoga and its spilled freight. In the aftermath of the explosion, it was impossible to tell that the burning mass had even been a wagon, so little of it remained. The smoke boiling up into the clear western sky was rife with the acrid odor of burning mule and gunpowder.
If you didn't know we was hauling ammo, how in the hell did it get aboard that wagon? Certain sure old Dutch didn't put in there without telling us about it.
Kuno bent to snuff a patch of burning sod and a burlap scrap marked with the first three letters of coffee. There were a dozen other such fires, but a recent October rain had dampened the ground enough to prevent a wildfire. Not far from the burlap scrap, a chunk of smooth, dark wood lay against a rock. Kuno walked over and picked it up. It was a broken rifle stock. The varnish glistening across the smooth walnut wood marked it as relatively new.
Didn't know you was hauling rifles, neither.
He and Serenity continued on past the burning wagon, which had burned so suddenly and so hotly that it was dying down now for lack of fuel. They found several more bits and pieces of Winchester rifles, some swaddled in charred burlap dusted with wheat flour, and part of a leather pouch marked with the large red numerals 4440. Dallas Snowberger had led the two remaining wagon teams onto leveler ground and had adjusted the harness ribbons and chains, some of which had gotten tangled in the frenzied run from the Utes. But he was standing behind and between the wagons as Kuno and Serenity marched up, his rifle resting on his shoulder, an incredulous expression on his dark-eyed features.
We hauling ammunition?
Help me get this sheet off here.
When they had the canvas free of the metal tie rings fixed to the outside of the wagon panels and had rolled it up against the back of the driver's box, Kuno lowered the end gate and leapt into the freight box. He shifted crates and sacks around until he'd exposed one of the big Colfax and Company ground wheat barrels. When he'd pried the top of the barrel up with a claw hammer, he removed his gloves and sank his hands into the brown speckled flour. Leaning forward, he sank them wrist deep. He felt something that wasn't flour. Wrapping his hands around the object, he pulled it up, spewing flour around the barrel. He held up the long burlap-wrapped object and tossed it to Serenity. He dug another one out of the barrel, tossed it to Dallas Snowberger, who'd been regarding his silent industry with grim skepticism. Kuno dug two more similar objects out of the barrel, tossed one onto the freight efficiently packed around him, and jerked the leather ties from both ends of the other one. He pulled the flour-dusted burlap back from what he already knew would be a rifle. Specifically, it was a 4440 Winchester Mode 1878 with a smooth, varnished walnut stock and blue steel receiver. It was so new that Kuno could smell the oil, the wood, and the freshly milled iron. Nothing fancy about the carbine, nothing distinctive about it. It was like the 10,000 other saddle guns that Winchester had built that same year. Except for the fact that it had been loaded onto Kuno's wagon without his knowing about it. Or, he thought, loaded into flour barrels that he himself, Serenity, Snowberger, and Rasmussen had loaded into the wagons back at the trailhead in Crowfeather, off the wagons of another supply train fresh in from the railroad line at Ute.
That skunk!
Serenity hefted his rifle in his hands and glared at Kuno.
Trick didn't tell you nothing about hauling guns and ammo for him?
If you're hauling ammo, you sure want to know about it and get paid for it.
I'm going to go down and bury Dutch. Then we're going to find out what these hidden rifles are about.
When Kuno had buried Dutch under some cedars along the northern slope, Serenity said a few words over the rock-covered grave, his sombrero in his hands. Then he and Snowberger climbed into the wagons, got their ribbons straightened out, and muscled the heavy oak handles back, releasing the wooden wheel brakes. Kuno mounted his skewbald, glancing once more at Dutch's grave, humping against the slope, marked with a crude wooden cross. He lifted his gaze to the ridge beyond, and then along the trail behind. No movement out there, but that didn't mean more Utes weren't near. Kuno gigged Renegade forward ahead of the wagons, and Serenity and Snowberger whipped up their teams, and they started east once more. The pale two-track trace wound into the Rawhide Range, hulking blue-green in the distance, more green than blue now with the sun angling down in the west. The fir-clad slopes were mottled here and there with thick groves of aspen, their leaves a rich October gold. The lower slopes were rusty with wild mahogany, choke cherry, and rabbit brush. The air cooled gradually and acquired a cinnamon tang touched with juniper and running pine sap. Kuno scouted the slopes on either side of the trail ahead of the wagons. He was glad to see mule deer and a few elk grazing the high parks between sprawling forests. That meant no Indians were skulking about, preparing another ambush. He even spotted a brown bear rambling across a slope, stopping every now and then to grab a snootful of gooseberries before continuing his lazy, uncaring stroll toward a bowl-shaped beaver meadow. He'd spied a few cattle here and there over the last 2 days of travel, but as he and the wagons continued deeper into the shelving slopes and shallow valleys along the western Rawhides, small, scattered herds appeared. Kuno didn't know much about cattle, but those he saw appeared to have been bred up from longhorns. Big, rangy beasts with red and white coats shagging up for winter and wearing plenty of tallow. The sun had just fallen when they dropped into a broad valley of breeze-brushed buffalo grass and sage, pooling with color, blue shadows. A couple of riders appeared on their right, white men in cowhide vests and ute chaps. They jogged down out of the pines of the higher slopes, six-shooters jutting from soft, worn holsters on their hips. Kuno, riding ahead of the wagons now, as he figured they were close to the Trent headquarters, held up his hand for Serenity and Snowburger to halt their teams. He watched the armed riders come on across the valley bottom with their deep-barreled, stout-legged cowponies.
Freight for the Trent Ranch?
The one who spoke was a stone-faced hombre with gray eyes beneath the funneled brim of his weather-stained Stetson. A matchstick poked out from one corner of his mouth. He and the other man both carried Spencer repeaters in saddle boots.
That's right.
Thought there were supposed to be three wagons.
There were, till about 2 hours ago.
The gray-eyed hombre glanced at his partner, a blue-eyed, dark-haired man with a jagged scar across his nose.
Follow us.
The riders spurred their ponies onto the trail ahead of Kuno and followed the bending trail along the valley's broad bottom, heading northeast. The caravan traveled for 15 more minutes before the trail curved more east than north, and there, straight ahead, hunkered at the base of a hulking gray ridge, lay a collection of log and adobe brick dwellings, a couple of big hay barns, and several stitch-and-rail corrals amidst scattered cottonwoods and sycamores. The Trent headquarters looked stark and insignificant at the side of that broad valley under that hogback mountain. The kind of man who'd carved a home for himself here, just himself, God of the coyotes, was a man born with a bark on. Either that, or he was as crazy as a tree full of owls. Kuno had never met Trent, only his foreman. Whoever the man was, and however tough or crazy he was, he had some questions to answer about those rifles and about the Indians Kuno should have been told about. The young freighter had been hornswoggled crossways, and Trent had cost him a good man, a wagon, and $500 worth of freight. A spring house and windmill angled past on Kuno's left, and then the two lead drovers swung right around an adobe brick, brush-roofed tool shed and blacksmith shop, heading toward a long, low bunkhouse at the south end of the hard-packed yard. As they did, Kuno looked up the 5% grade toward the main lodge standing 100 yards away. Flanked with cottonwoods and ash, buffering it from the steep mountain wall behind, it was a big, sprawling, 2.5-story barrack with smoke churning from a large fieldstone chimney. The first story was constructed of gray rock with deep-set, shuttered windows. The second and third stories were all lodgepole pine, with sashed windows under the broad eaves staring grimly down on the yard. These two were outfitted with swung-back shutters, notched with rifle slits. A broad gallery sloped off the house's front wall. From the posts hung at least 2 dozen deer, elk, and moose antlers, with skulls of the same, as well as bears, horses, cows, and a few other animals Kuno couldn't identify. 3 shaggy, ash-colored wolf pelts hung from a rope stretched between 2 front galley posts, ruffling in the crisp breeze and ever-darkening as the light bled from the vast, empty sky. Bringing his eyes back forward as he approached the bunkhouse, Kuno turned them sharply left again to where a slender figure in a buffalo robe stood outside a horse stable. It was a girl, he realized after closer inspection, with long, silky blonde hair falling from under a low-crowned sombrero. The girl was holding a charcoal-colored kitten on her shoulder. She and the kitten were both staring warily toward Kuno and the wagons. The girl was backing toward the house, flanking her, the wind blowing her hair as she tried pulling the kitten down off her shoulder and into her arms. She stumbled slightly on a rock, and Kuno saw tan, doe-skin moccasins beneath her ankle-length robe. As she wrestled the kitten into her arms, she turned her back to the yard and continued up the grade toward the house, lowering her head to the cat, her silky hair blowing out behind her in the wind. Kuno turned to the bunkhouse, where 3 men in heavy coats milled, steaming coffee mugs in their hands. The 2 lead drovers swung down from their saddles.
Freight from Crowfeather, boss.
One of the men leaning against the bunkhouse wall straightened slowly and moved forward, scowling up at Kuno and the wagons. He was a slightly built man with big, round blue eyes under a single black brow and longish, dark brown hair curling over his ears. Something in his face, the perpetually belligerent eyes, the big white front teeth and flared nostrils, reminded Kuno of a badger.
Thought there were supposed to be 3 wagons.
There were.
Badger looked over the wagons. The gray-eyed gent who'd led the caravan into the yard spoke up.
Engines.
Quirt settled his malevolent gaze on Kuno, tossing his head toward a large windowless log building mounted on 6-foot stilts beyond the cookhouse. The area beneath the floor jammed tight with unsplit pine logs. A block and tackle rigged with a stout iron hook hung down over the raised loading dock.
Take it on over to the supply shed. I'll send a couple men over to help you unload. Could have gotten here sooner. It's almost chow time.
Kuno nodded to Serenity and Snowburger, and as the men moved the teams into motion once more, Kuno put his horse up to the bunkhouse's raised porch.
I want to talk to Trent. He up at the main house?
You don't talk to Trent. Only Cutner talks to Trent. Cutner's a ramrod.
Quirt thumbed his chest, clad in a collarless black and white calico shirt under a fringed deerskin jacket.
I'm the Segundo. Freighters deal with me. When I've checked off your freight, made sure everything's here we ordered and paid for, minus, of course, what you lost to the engines, then I send up to the house for a check, and Cutner brings it down.
Kuno saw no reason to waste time on this badger-faced lackey. He reined Renegade around and nudged the horse with his knees, heading toward the house.
Hey, don't you understand English?
Kuno kept going. A big man in soiled buckskins, a long rat hair coat, and a wool cap that led a tall black horse from the stable on the right.
Hans Bach, stop that son of a bitch!
The big man dropped the black's reins, and as Kuno was about to round the stable's front corner, bolted out in front of Renegade and grabbed the skewbald's bridle. He wore a thick, curly brown beard and a patch over one eye.
Where do you think you're going, amigo?
Let go my horse, friend.
The man held Renegade's bit firm in his big hand as Quirt came stomping across the yard toward Kuno.
I don't like it when folks don't listen to me, see? Now, I told you, no one talks to Trent but Cutner.
Unable to control his fury anymore, Kuno removed his boot from his right stirrup, set the sole of the same boot flat against Hansbach's chest, and kicked it forward hard. The assault took the big German by surprise, and he jerked straight backward, releasing Renegade's bridle bit and fell on his broad ass in the dirt.
God damn it!
The badger-faced Segundo bounded forward and grabbed Kuno's right arm. Before the ramrod could touch his jaw, Kuno cold-cocked him.
That's enough!
Everyone turned to see a big man standing 30 yards up the grade toward the house, his hip cocked, boots spread. He was a hatless, bearded gent in whipcord trousers and a sheepskin vest over a black shirt with pearl buttons. He wore two pistols and soft leather holsters high on his lean hips, and a bone-handled bowie knife jutted from a deerskin sheath crowding his left side gun. Smoke licked from the sawed-off double-barreled shotgun that he held straight up in his left hand. The gut-shredder's brown leather lanyard hung around his thigh. His short, curly, pewter-colored hair lifted in the breeze around his head. His face was expressionless, his eyes shaded by his mantling brow.
Kuno Massey?
Kuno regarded the shotgun-wielding newcomer skeptically, haltingly, half expecting a pumpkin-sized, massive, double-aught buck to be blasted through his belly.
Who are you?
I'm the one with the shotgun. Mr. Trent wants you up at the house.
Kuno began tramping up the grade toward the man with the shotgun. The man with the shotgun wheeled and began making for the big house, spewing smoke from its chimney at the top of the hill. Kuno followed several paces behind and kept an eye skinned on the two boars of the gut shredder propped on the shoulder of the man he assumed was the foreman, Cutner. He wasn't sure what kind of bailiwick he'd ridden into here. He hoped he wouldn't have to shoot his way out, but he would if he and his men were crowded any more than they already had been. As he approached the house behind the foreman, he saw a man standing atop the porch, puffing a brass-tipped briar pipe. He was a slender, stoop-shouldered gent in a beat-up opera hat from which a thick mop of silver hair curled. The man had a long, heavy-boned, craggy face, a broad, pitted nose with a round, red tip and a nasty-looking growth to one side of it, up near his right eye and tapering into his cheek that was the color of near-ripe choke cherries. A long, white scar dog-legged down over his left jaw from just above a large, red ear. A clawhammer coat hung off his bony shoulders, and his baggy denims were secured to his equally bony hips with braided rawhide suspenders. Beneath the coat was a soft doeskin tunic elaborately stitched with red and blue thread. From the breast pocket, another pipe, a notebook, and a pencil stub protruded. Kuno mounted the porch steps behind the man with the shotgun.
Trent, I want to know why I was hauling rifles and ammo without being told. And I want to know why I wasn't told the Utes were on the prod out there.
Check your tone, Button. And it's Mr. Trent to you.
Stand down, Henry. You got a figure on a torn-up corral when you invite a broomtail maverick into your remuda?
This broomtail broke Quirt's nose, Mr. Trent.
It'll mend.
The old man looked Kuno up and down.
So, you're Kuno Massey. Built like a lumber dray, but I figured you'd be taller.
You have the advantage here, Mr. Trent. I wouldn't know you from Adam's Awfox. How do you know me?
Didn't need to meet personal. I heard about your exploits with your six gun and fists. Shit, boy, you're a legend in these parts, don't you know that?
Let's get back to the snubbing post, Mr. Trent.
We'll get to your business.
Trent canted his head toward the door.
Inside. You look like you could use a drink. And adequate recompense for your troubles.
Before Kuno could reply, Trent had turned and moved through the open, split-log door, limping deep on one side. Kuno moved through the door and followed Trent's vague, limping figure through the smoky shadows that permeated the lodge. The place smelled gamey and smoky, with the tang of kerosene and candles. As Kuno moved through a hall that seemed to split the big, silent, ship-like house in two, he glanced into several rooms furnished with heavy wooden cabinets and ornate brocade-upholstered chairs and leather couches. Charcoal or wood-chip braziers glowed. Game trophies loomed on the walls, and hide rugs were stretched upon the floors. Uneasily, he followed Trent through an open door, with Henry Cutner clomping lazily along behind him. Trent moved around behind a heavy oak desk, easily the size of a freight wagon's bed. He sank down into a deep chair upholstered in mountain goat and boasting ram's horns for arms. Then, Trent threw open a large checkbook and reached into a pocket of his frock coat.
Henry, pour Mr. Massey a drink, will you? I had that cognac shipped all the way from San Francisco nearly a year ago. 6 bottles. Still have 2 in the cellar. I'm more of a whiskey man myself.
Kuno stood halfway between the desk and the door. He hadn't taken his hat off.
I don't drink the hard stuff.
Oh?
Trent looked Kuno up and down.
Well, that strikes me as odd. Most pistoleros go in for the hard hooch, an easy cooch. I should know. I met a passel.
Look, Mr. Trent, I'm sorry if I spoil all your notions about pistoleros. I'm just a hard-working freighter who lost a good man about 3 hours ago. On Double Horseshoe Range, I might add. Because you didn't warn me about the Ute trouble.
Oh?
Trent had donned a pair of silver-rimmed spectacles that looked too small and delicate atop that big red nose.
How is that my fault? I gave no assurances that your journey would be free of the usual hazards.
Utes aren't a usual hazard. Haven't been for a couple years. If they had been, I'd have hired extra men, and you'd have paid for them.
Kuno moved forward and sat at the edge of the guest chair, angled before the desk, and rested his elbows on his knees.
Now, about the rifles and ammo I didn't know I was carrying? That's dealing from the bottom of the deck, Mr. Trent.
Trent set his pen down, removed his glasses, and sagged back in his chair.
That, I admit, wasn't entirely honest.
Entirely? If my man hadn't been dead before the Indians set fire to his wagon, he sure as hell would have been afterward. Lucky there weren't more of us around that wreck when it popped.
Oh, hold on, let me explain.
Trent looked at Henry Cutner standing between the door and a large fireplace beneath a snarling bobcat head.
Henry, give him one of those ales from the cellar.
I don't want an ale. I want to know about them rifles.
Trent returned his gaze to Kuno, slitting the gray, slightly rheumy orbs once more, as though again sizing up the wolf he'd found in his office.
Well, I don't blame you for getting your neck up. I'll admit, it was an underhanded thing to do, but I had good reason. A mercenary reason, but a reason nonetheless.
Trent wrestled up from his chair and, tossing his glasses on the desk, limped over to the fireplace.
A month and a half ago, we had trouble out here. A couple of my men, they hadn't worked for me for long, and I hadn't even met them. It was Quirt that hired them. They found a Ute girl out along one of my creeks.
The stove-up old rancher turned his ass to the fire and stared out the window on the far side of the room.
They raped her, and then they killed her. Said she fell and hit her head on a rock. Well, there's been hell to pay out here ever since.
Kuno's gut clenched at the story of the Indian girl's rape and murder. He had a feeling he knew where the story was heading from there, but he let the old rancher, warming his bony behind in front of the fire, continue.
I give the rapists their wages and sent them packing on the same horses they rode in on.
Logan Trent stared gravely out the ever-darkening window at a large cottonwood in the backyard that was a mess of untrimmed rabbit brush, rocks, gnarled trees, and wheatgrass.
Henry and two other men found them a week later. They hadn't gotten off my range. They'd been hacked to bits no bigger than one of my hands. It was one of their clothes that identified them.
Can't blame the Utes for that. Probably would have done the same myself.
No, you can't blame them. But they should have quit there.
Trent swung his grizzled head toward Kuno.
My range riders have been attacked on 3 occasions. One was killed. 2 lion shacks have been burned, and 50 head of my prime cattle will run off a ridge. Killed. Wolf and eagle bait.
Have you talked to the cavalry station at the Rogers outpost?
I sent a courier. He came back the next day tied to his saddle and decked out in a Ute war lance.
Trent walked over to a table fronting the window.
You see, young Massey, the girl those 2 cork-headed lobos raped was Chief Leaping Wolf's youngest daughter. Wasn't right in the head. Often ran off from the lodge to fish or swim on her own.
How'd you find out who she was?
One of the chief's son-in-laws, a white man named Noah Crawford, rode in and told me. Crawford has a couple of gold diggings on my land. I get a cut if he finds anything. Anyway, Crawford said the Chief Leaping Wolf is so blistering mad that when Crawford tried to get the old man to turn his horns in, to content himself with the fact that the rapists had died slow, hideous deaths, Leaping Wolf almost killed him. Had him whipped and staked outside for 2 nights in spite of the chief's daughter's protests. Crawford ain't going back to the chief's encampment anytime soon.
Kuno studied the man's profile. Trent's misfortune tempered his anger, but the image of Dutch Rasmussen's arrow-bristling body was still fresh in his mind, and the smoke from the burned wagon still lingered in his nostrils and lungs.
Why wasn't I told about this, Mr. Trent?
Because I didn't think you'd come. Or might not be able to find enough men to come. It's a gut-wrenching trek through rugged country, even without the Indians. You throw them in.
Trent limped back over to his chair and sat down. He favored Kuno with an admiring, coyote-like grin.
I knew you'd try to come. Given the right pay, and given your reputation for taking on jobs others might shrink from. It was your father and stepmother who was murdered, correct? And you pursued their killers, the notorious Rolf Anderson and Sammy Spoon, all the way up the Bozeman Trail.
Where the hell did you hear about that?
Oh, word gets around one watering hole after another. Eventually even makes its way out here.
Trent shuttered an eye and pointed at Kuno's chest.
That ain't all I know, neither. You killed Franklin Evans, rancher up around Julesburg.
Trent, you look as happy as a tick on a fat dog.
That bastard ran me off my first homestead up in the Antelope Hills, about 20 miles from Evans' headquarters. That's when I headed here, to the backside of the Great Divide. I always meant to go back and beef the bastard myself, but then I started raising herds and kids. The opportunity exhausted itself. Besides, I figured the old rattlesnake had done bit the wrong dog fox and got his head chewed off. Yes, I heard all about that. And then, after this powder keg with Leaping Wolf's daughter exploded, and I found myself in dire need of a supply run to get me through the winter, well, I heard your name mentioned by a few fellas out on the range. said they'd seen the brawny blonde firebrand who killed Franklin Evans hauling freight for Fort Dixon.
Trent shrugged his bony shoulders.
So, I fired off a telegraph to Dwight Doyle and the Mercantile in Crowfeather to hire you on. And I gave him my list to fill.
But he left out the part listing the rifles. To me, anyway.
Oh, yeah. We're back to the rifles. Damn it. With Leaping Wolf running wild across my graze, I needed a good 30 repeaters to get me through the winter. One for every man I got, with plenty of ammo for each gun. And by God, I was gonna get it any way I could. I knew you could get your wagons through, so I knew you were the one. No, I didn't tell you about the rifles. I didn't tell anyone about the rifles except for Doyle, because I didn't want it to get around that Leaping Wolf was on the prod. If that happened, I'd never get anyone to run me freight. If I didn't starve out this winter, I'd be overrun with savages, and old Leaping Wolf squaws would be mopping out their lodges with my pretty silver hair.
Suddenly, Trent winked as he gazed across the desk at Kuno.
Except you. I knew you'd come. I knew you wouldn't be afraid, even see it as a challenge. But most of the other freighters I've known are far too concerned about their wagons and their mules.
And their men.
And their men, for any daring do.
Well, I've got one dead man, a burned wagon, and six dead mules. And if the rest of the ammo had caught fire, I'd be out more wagons and more mules. And I might not be sitting here squawking about it.
Trent picked up a pen from a holder and flipped the cap off an ink bottle. He looked at Kuno over his smudged spectacles.
Will a bank draft do?
As long as I can make it back to Crowfeather to cash it.
Trent dipped the pen in the ink bottle and scribbled out the check. He set the pen aside, ripped the check out of the book, and tossed it across the desk to Kuno. Kuno picked it up. He'd been prepared to get his tail up all over again, but the amount, $2,000 more than covered the agreed-upon figure, as well as an additional amount for the mules and the wagon, and for the 30 rifles Kuno had been hauling in ignorance.
I know there's no covering the cost of a dead man, but it's a tough country. If you look close, you'll see a grave in every wash.
I'll tell that to Dutch's woman in Crowfeather.
Stuffing the folded check in a pocket of his buckskin tunic, Kuno rose from his chair and turned to the door.
I'd like to invite you and your men back to the house for dinner later, say around 7 o'clock. Give you adequate time for a bath and a change of clothes if you so desire.
Kuno tramped past the grimly staring Kuttner to the door.
No thanks.
I have a wonderful cook. A full-blooded Sioux with a club foot. Ain't much good for anything but cooking. And the cooking he does right well. He's prepping an elk roast with a delightful choke cherry sauce.
Kuno turned from the office door as the old man sat back in his chair.
You and your men are welcome to bed down here in the lodge as well. I have 4 empty rooms upstairs.
We'll dine in the cook shack and throw down with your men in the bunkhouse, Mr. Trent. We'll rest the mules for a day or two. Be pulling out again by Wednesday.
Trent stared across the room at Kuno, brows beetled.
Please. It's the least I can do to compensate your men.
The check will do.
Kuno wheeled and tramped back down the dark hall toward the front door. As he approached the broad foyer near the front door, Kuno heard the person on the stairs. He stopped and turned to see a girl standing halfway down a dark, narrow stairwell. The same long-haired blonde he'd seen in the yard with the cat. She stood now, dripping wet and holding a buffalo robe around her slender shoulders. With her hair plastered across her head and over the robe's broad collar, she looked like a half-drowned gopher. Only her face was far from gopher-like. It was, in a word, angelic.
Mr. Massey?
The robe came down to just below her knees. One bare foot was slightly lifted on one step, while the other had come down sideways on the step below. Her wet calves were peach pale, smooth, and perfectly sculpted.
It's Kuno, Miss...
My bathroom is over Father's office, and I heard you talking. I wasn't meaning to eavesdrop.
The girl tipped her head to one side and knotted her brows.
Won't you please come to supper? We seldom get company out here, and Father gets lonely. He told me all about how you hunted down the killer of your father and stepmother. He's quite the connoisseur of gunslingers, you see. And he's been waiting to meet you.
The pretty blue-eyed waif bent her knees with beseeching and balled her cheeks, which were mottled red from her hot bath and from chagrin at her half-dressed state.
Won't you please join us? It would mean so much to him, and he's ordered a big elaborate meal in your honor, Mr. Massey.
She fumbled with the robe, which she held from the inside up close to her throat with both hands. As she did, the two unbuttoned flaps parted slightly to reveal the deep inside curves of her creamy breasts. They too appeared pink from the hot bath. The vision bit Kuno deep, and his throat dried. In one fell swoop, his beef with the old arrogant rancher was gone, and all that remained was this naked, wet vision of young, vibrant femininity clad in a buffalo robe before him.
I reckon, if you think that's important.
I do indeed, Mr. Massey.
All right then. I'll be back.
Thank you.
The girl turned suddenly and began padding back up the stairs.
Hey, wait a minute.
She stopped, turned. The robe parted even farther, revealing for a split second all of one pink bud-like nipple. She seemed totally oblivious of her beauty and sensuality, which was somehow enhanced by that bulky, moth-chewed robe.
What's your name?
Oh, I'm Michelle Trent. I live here most all the time now.
You'll be joining us for supper?
Of course.
Kuno felt his lips spread with a shit-eating grin, and he was glad Serenity couldn't see him now.
All right, then.
.45 Caliber is continued on the next CD.